Glad you're here. Really glad you're here. In just a few minutes, I'm going to share one of my favorite stories from the Bible. It is full of intrigue and unexpected twists and turns and betrayals and iron chariots and all kinds of stuff like that. But before I do, I just want to ask a question. I want you to think about a question. Where do you look to for help when you're in a tight spot or a difficult situation? Where do you look for deliverance? Now, we're in church, so of course a bunch of you are like, Jesus, and you'll get your star for saying that later. But I want you to really pause and reflect. Don't give me the church answer. I want you to pause and reflect about yourself, because I think that if it was just you and I sitting talking over coffee somewhere, even though I don't drink coffee, you might say, well, okay, well, help with what? Because where I look to for help or deliverance depends on what it is I need help or deliverance from. Because there are all kinds of things going on in our lives that we need help with. Or there are things in our life that we need to kind of be delivered from and rescued from. And so what's the situation we're talking about? Because then I'll know where I look for deliverance. It's a unique world we've created. I don't know if you realize how unique it is. That in this generation, at this point in time, basically, any of us can go to a computer and type in the situation that we need deliverance and help with, and it will spit back all kinds of customized potential solutions for whatever that situation is that you and I can pursue. For instance, if you need deliverance from debt, you know, the obvious answer is to be nice to your rich uncle. Unfortunately, my niece and my nephews don't have one of those. Well, not me, at least. You could maybe try the lottery. That's a lot of people do that, right? How many of you have friends who you know play the lottery religiously, right? Or maybe better than that, you could get a financial advisor to help you manage your finances better. But you know what? If that's where I'm having trouble, I know what to do. People know where to go. There's obvious solutions they pursue for that. If you're having trouble at work, maybe the deliverance you need is for your boss to realize how bad your manager is and fire them. Right? And so you're really looking to that boss to step in and be the deliverer, right? How many of you have had that? I know that's going on. Or maybe you need someone to deliver you by hiring you out of the job you're in, so you're in a new place entirely. Or if you're in pain or sick, what do? You go to a doctor. You go to the doctor that's going to provide the deliverance. If it's your foot, you go to the podiatrist. If it's your eyes, you go to the ophthalmologist. I don't know who you go to for your ears. I think it's just the ear, nose, and throat person. Why don't they have a cool name like the others? But so audiologist, there you go. Jerry knows. So you know where to go. There's obvious help where you go for whatever the situation is, but it's all custom made. If you've got problems with addiction to something, where do you go? You go to a rehab place. I think you get the idea. There are obvious places that we turn to for help and deliverance from the particular things that may be troubling us each and every day. Tell me what your problem is. I'll tell you the obvious place to go to start getting help and deliverance. But what if real deliverance doesn't come from obvious places? And what if what we see as the obvious problem isn't really the problem that needs to be solved, isn't really the thing that we need deliverance from? And that's where this story comes in, because this story is all about where deliverance comes from. It's the story of Israel's third spin around the wheel in the book of Judges. And here's how it starts. See if you can spot the wheel. So you can follow along in the app here. I'm gonna be in Judges chapter 4. You can follow along in your Bible. You can follow along in the app. Most of the verses I'll have up here on the screen too if you need it. Here's how it starts. See if you can spot the wheel here in these verses. Verse 1 of Judges chapter 4. Again, the Israelites did evil in the eyes of the Lord now that Ehud was dead. Remember last week we talked about Ehud. Ehud was the guy who went around leaving swords in people's bellies, right? So he dies, and immediately, once he's gone, no longer there to rule over Israel and keep them in line, they again turn to doing evil in God's eyes. The same thing again, again, again. The same thing. As soon as he's gone, oh, hey guys, let's go up to the temple of Baal and worship with some of the prostitutes they have there. Again, the same thing. And here's, I think, what if you read through the book of Judges and you see this happen again and again and again, what you need to realize, what we often fail to realize, is that sin is not a roller coaster, it's a rut. We think sin is going to be exciting because it's naughty or it's, you know, no one's doing this, or I'm going to cover this up. And it seems exciting, but the truth is sin is not a roller coaster. It's a rut you get stuck in. I mean, think about what a roller coaster is. It's a rut too, isn't it? It's exciting the first time around, maybe the second time around. Third time around, you're starting to feel sick. Fourth time around, it's boring and starting to hurt. Fifth time, sixth time, seventh time, you realize you are just in a rut. Sin is not a fun roller coaster ride. It is a rut that's taken us down. So there's the first part. They're back in the rut. They're back on the wheel. They're in the disobedience. What comes next? The discipline. So verse 2, the Lord sold them into the hands of Jabin, the king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. Sisera, who was the commander of King Jabin's army, he was based in Harosheth Hagoyim, because he had 900 chariots fitted with iron and had cruelly oppressed the Israelites for 20 years. This guy had like the M1, A1 tanks of chariots, right? These were the best fighting machines out there. They would mow through infantrymen like they were nothing, right? So this guy has these chariots and he rules the whole area for King Jabin, Sisera does. And so he oppresses the Israelites with that power. And then what comes next? Bottom of the wheel. They cried to the Lord for help, the distress. And it just so happens at that time, Israel was being led by a woman named Deborah, who was a prophet. That's right. Thousands of years ago, the nation of Israel was led by a woman. And we think we're so progressive. Deborah sat under a well-known palm tree there, because oftentimes trees were the place where judgment would happen. So she would sit under this palm tree that everyone knew where this tree was. It was unique, probably taller than the others. And they would come there to that palm tree, and Deborah would hear their cases, and she would provide wisdom and judgment for all the people in the nation of Israel. And she led that nation. She's the best example of a leader in the whole book of Judges. And God led her to go and call a man named Barak, and call Barak to come and be the deliverer for God's people, to lead the army, God's army, out to fight Sisera. And so this is what she says. She goes to Barak and says, "The Lord, the God of Israel, commands you, go take with you 10,000 men from Naphtali and Zebulun and lead them up to Mount Tabor. I will lead Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and troops to the Kishon River and give them into your hands." And Barak said, "If you go with me, I'll go. But if you don't go with me, I'm not going." And Deborah said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman." And so off they went, Deborah, Barak, and the 10,000 warriors behind them, hiking to Mount Tabor. So I brought a map to try and help you understand this. Up to the top left, you can see it's the Mediterranean Sea in that corner. So just to give you a picture of where you are. And so there's where Sisera's group is camped, right on the edge of the mountain. And here's where Barak is coming from, this area at the bottom. Right, that's where they're at. And they're going to move through there, and they're going to go up to Mount Tabor. And it just so happened, as they moved through there and go up toward Mount Tabor, that there was a guy named Heber, or Eber, who was a descendant of Moses, a descendant of Moses' father-in-law, Jethro. So he belonged to Moses' father-in-law's people. And Moses' father-in-law's people had joined Israel and traveled with them and went with them into the promised land. And Jethro had moved to an area near Mount Tabor. So now Barak is up on Mount Tabor there, and Heber is right nearby. He moved to that area and set up his tents and his family and everybody right there under a big oak tree that everyone knew, because it was a huge oak tree and it was very famous there. And so that's where he set up his tent. right there along the path that Barak was walking to get up to Mount Tabor. So he got to watch them travel, Barak and Deborah and those 10,000 troops. The problem was, Eber was a traitor. He was only living there because he'd abandoned Israel, and he'd run away from his tribe, and he'd made an alliance with Sisera and King Jabin. So when Eber saw Deborah and Barak and the 10,000 soldiers marching up onto Mount Tabor, he sent word over to Sisera at his place and said, "Hey, dude, they're over here. They're going up to Mount Tabor. Come get them." And that lured Sisera out. He came out with his 900 iron chariots and thousands of infantry men behind them and swooped into that valley along the Kishon River. And now what you need to know, again, is that 900 iron chariots could cut through 10,000 men like they were butter. I really, 10,000 men against 900 iron chariots is not a fair fight. They're fitted with blades and things sticking out the side. There are soldiers inside with spears and bows and arrows. It's not a fair fight. And so Deborah sees these machines of death coming down along the Kishon River in that valley there, the Jezreel Valley. And she goes to Barak and says, "Up, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go out before you?" So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And here's a picture. I don't know how well you can see it. Maybe dim the lights a little so people can see it. I took this picture from Mount Precipice in Nazareth. I'm right near the town. If you were to look behind where this picture is coming from, you'd see the village where Jesus was born, right? Or where Jesus grew up, rather. And so this is out over, that's not Mount Tabor. Mount Tabor is up to the left. That's, what was the name of that? Mount Moriah. And so, but this is the plain. This is where Sisera would have been coming up from your right to your left. And you see what's down there? It's all farming because it's all nice, wet, fertile ground. And you can see, if you look close, you can see the pools of water and the little ponds and things all throughout. That's all agriculture land to this day because it's a wet, fertile land. And so as Sisera is riding up through this area and Barak is coming down from Mount Tabor and they're going to meet in this around this area, all of a sudden this rainstorm out of nowhere breaks out. I mean, Sisera, when he was up on it at home, he was checking his weather app before he went out, and it said nothing but sun for the next 10 days. He's like, great time to go fight. Everything's going to be nice and dry. Perfect. And he heads out. But as they get there, this torrential rain just starts to drop on that whole area. And you know what happens to riverbanks when inches and inches and inches of water fall all of a sudden, right? They overflow and the ground around them gets soft and marshy. And then you can imagine what might happen to iron-fitted chariots as they try and roll through muddy, wet, marshy ground. They got stuck in the mud. So just like that, Sisera's advantage was wiped out by an act of God. And Barak swoops in with all of his troops. They begin to destroy Sisera's army, begin chasing him back where they came from, up through that Jezreel Valley, back to where they were going. And Sisera himself, he jumps off of his chariot and he runs the other direction. He doesn't run back toward home because he knows that's a lot of ground they can catch me on easily. He runs actually up into the mountains and he runs toward Eber's place because he was smart. And figured he'd have some hiding there. And so he runs toward Eber and looks, because there, that's his ally, that's his guy. They'll hide him, they'll protect him, they'll keep him safe. And so I shortened his name to Sissy because it wouldn't fit. No, I made him. As he gets there, Eber's wife Jael is waiting and sees him coming and sees him running for his life. And she says, come here. Don't worry, don't be afraid. Come here and come into my tent. So he runs into her tent and she covers him with a rug. And he tells her, "I'm thirsty, please give me some water." And so she gets him some milk, some nourishment, and she gives it to him and he drinks it. And then she puts the rug back over him. And he says, "Look, if anybody comes, just stand there at the opening and tell him you didn't see me. All right, just tell him you didn't see me." And then he just passes out from exhaustion under that rug and falls asleep. A little while later, Barak and his guys track Sisera all the way up to this camp under this big oak tree. And Jael sees Barak coming. And she calls him and says, "Hey, come here. And I will show you the man you're seeking." So she leads Barak into her tent. And Barak couldn't believe his eyes. There lay Sisera on the ground with a tent peg through his head, dead. You see, when Sisera had fallen asleep, Jael had taken a tent peg and a hammer, and she had walked quietly over to him where he was lying. She put that tent peg against that temple of that enemy of God's people, and she drove it through all the way into the ground and killed him there. Sisera found judgment under that oak tree. And so I read a story like that, and the question, where does deliverance come from? Where does deliverance come from? There are places we all expect deliverance to come from. In this story, most of the people of Israel would have expected it to come from Barak and these 10,000 soldiers. You know, please, you know, what do you do if an army comes and attacks you? What do we hope if an army comes and attacks us? We hope our army will defend us. That's the obvious place deliverance will come from. You got to have an army there to protect you. Our first response to trouble is always to look for the obvious and most expedient thing to deliver us. That's our first response to trouble. It always is. Every day you and I are looking for something to solve all of our little day-to-day problems. We're looking for things that'll deliver us from the daily problems that we have dealing with life, right? There are relationship problems, work problems, money problems, sex problems, health problems, emotion problems, kid problems. The daily grind is full of problems that we are always looking for something to help me and rescue me from this stuff. Deliver me from it, get me out of it, help me find a way through it. And we usually pick whatever seems most obvious and expedient. Need more money? You just got to work more. Need more help with my kids? I just got to get better teachers for them, right? Whatever it is. I'm dealing with this pain. I need more drugs. I'm dealing with this sorrow. I need more to drink. Whatever's quickest and most powerful and most expedient, we reach and we grab for those things. Whatever gets your boss off your back. Whatever gets your spouse to not argue with you again. Whatever stops your kid from crying and bothering you. Grab the quickest, most expedient thing. And then on a larger scale, besides our own daily things that all of us are dealing with and looking for deliverance from, there's just the bigger things in our world that are national and global crises. And so we're looking for the Jeff Bezoses of the world who swooped in now with billions of dollars to help combat global warming, right? We're looking for people like him to step in and combat the coronavirus that has everyone so afraid, and to combat food shortages and all these other crises around us. We're looking for others. We're looking for the government to step in and fight back corporate greed and the problems it causes. And then we're looking for the press to step in and keep tabs on government greed and all the problems it causes. And then we're looking for watchdog groups to keep eyes on the press for all the greed that they have. It just, there's no end to it. There's no end to any of it. We're all looking for salvation and deliverance from all kinds of things, large and small, every day. And we are prone to look in what we think are the most obvious places to find the deliverer, the thing that will deliver us from it. I hope you can see that. Just get that concept and see it in your own life. You know how it applies to you. You know how that applies to you. But have you ever considered that deliverance might come from unexpected places? I don't mean just, you know, thought the idea like, oh yeah, but actually thought deeply about what you're looking to for help every day. What you're practically on a daily basis looking to be the thing that's delivering you and bringing you life, and whether or not that thing actually can give you a real deliverance, and whether or not you would be willing to take the risk of trusting deliverance to come from a place that's unexpected. Deliverance comes from unexpected places. I mean, this story screams that deliverance comes from unexpected places. Let's just go through the characters. Deborah, 3,000 years ago, it's pretty unexpected that there would be a woman leading the nation of Israel. That is surprising to us, even today, right? Not just leading it. In the book of Judges, Deborah is the best of all the leaders Israel ever has. She is the cleanest example, the clearest example of a good leader, someone who did what they were supposed to do. She's the one who fulfills the role of ruling and judging God's people instead of just fighting battles, right? How unexpected that they would submit to her leadership and trust her to lead them. Barak. You know, there's a couple ways we can read Barak's actions in this story. In the past, I know I've read it as, you know, he's being cowardly, so he's got to have, you know, Deborah there with him. But you know what? I've looked at this more and more and studied him more and more to see, is this really a lack of faith? Because when I go and read Hebrews 11, you all know what Hebrews chapter 11 is called? It's a book in the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 11 is called the Hall of Faith, the Faith Hall of Fame chapter, because it lists all the examples of faith that we see throughout Scripture. And Barak is listed as an example of faith in God. And then as I read, you know, there's some translations translate it that Deborah says to him, because you've, you know, insisted I go with you, therefore the glory is going to go to a woman. But that could just as easily be read, nevertheless, just want you to know, here's where we're going. Here's where this story is going to end. It's going to end in the glory for a woman. And so there are three things about Barak that to me tell me that he is so unexpectedly humble. Where you want the leader to come in and say, okay, I want you to go and take these troops and fight. You want him to come in and say, yeah, all right, let's go. I'm ready, right? And he comes in and says, one, I'm not doing it unless you're with me because you represent God's presence among our people. I want God's presence with us or I'm not going. Since when is that a bad thing to want? Doesn't that show unexpected humility? Barak is going out then against really bad odds to face an opponent with clear military advantage. And yet, he trusts God enough to obey. And then three, even after he's told, you're going to go fight this battle and put your life on the line, but you're not going to get the glory for it, a woman is, he isn't just, oh, what? Oh, no. He goes anyway. You know, I think what's unexpected about this man is his incredible humility and obedience. You know, that's not expected. That's unusual. And then you get to that guy, Eber. What an amazing twist that this guy thinks he's made an alliance with a greater power, right? He thinks he's safe because he's gone and he's left Israel and he's aligned himself with the greater power in the region and he abandons his people and all that stuff. And he ends up being the one God uses to lure Sisera into a trap. So all along the way, he's thinking, I'm just gonna go, I'm gonna do my thing, I'm gonna make my alliance with these people, they're more powerful, and ends up being the very person God uses to lure Sisera to come out to that area around that river so his chariots could get bogged down in the mud and he could lose. What an unexpected twist and source of deliverance that guy ended up being. He ended up saving Israel. The storm is another one. Another part, every part of this story is unexpected. No one expected a storm to come in, but boom, it's suddenly there. Before Sisera swoops down into that valley, he doesn't expect it. He gets there, boom, it hits. And their chariots are bogged down in the mud and they can't go anywhere. And they lose because of an unexpected storm. And then the biggest unexpected twist, if any of you here had never heard that story before, the biggest unexpected twist is that Jael, this weak little woman, right, drives a tent peg through the guy's head, drives a tent peg through the head of the enemy of Israel, being the one God uses to execute judgment against that guy. No one expected that. She's going against her husband. She's risking her own life. She's risking everything. What unexpected courage and strength from a place that most people wouldn't have expected it. This isn't the way you write your great battle stories of heroes, right? If this were written by an historian, it would have been, yeah, Barak showed up and he killed him and, you know, that was the end of it. You wouldn't hear about the tent peg thing. The whole story screams, deliverance comes from unexpected places. But why does it come from unexpected places? Why does deliverance come from so many unexpected places? And maybe you noticed the reason why in some of the verses we read. Maybe you already picked up on this. There's a concept here and a principle that I think changes our lives when we grab hold of it. Look again, let me read for you again some of the things Deborah and the narrator say in this story. Hasn't the Lord said, I will lead Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and his troops to the Kishon River and give him into your hands? The Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman. Deborah says to Barak, up, for this day, this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go out before you? And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. So on that day, God subdued Jabin, the king of Canaan, before the people of Israel. Deliverance may come from unexpected places, but it always comes from the Lord. That's what you and I need to learn from this and recognize in this, because right there is the essence of the gospel that you and I cling to, that you and I are followers of, that is supposed to shape our lives. That very idea, deliverance may come from all kinds of places that are unexpected, but it always comes from the Lord. It comes from unexpected places, yes. And it comes even for an unexpected problem, not the problem we thought we needed solved. We think the main thing we need deliverance from is all the big and small problems that we're dealing with every day. Those are the things that are much more pressing in our hearts and minds. Those are our Sisera and Jabin problems. But why were they struggling with Sisera and Jabin? That's the real problem. Do you get that? The real problem is not that they're struggling with Sisera and Jabin. It's what led them to be struggling with Sisera and Jabin. The real problem for you and I is not the stuff we're dealing with every day because life is difficult. It's why life is difficult for us. It's because of sin. Because we've wandered away from God. We have a sin problem, a disobedience and sin problem, and that's what lies underneath all of it. The diagnosis of our problem is that we need much more than just daily individual salvations for the things we're going through every week. And we need much more than global salvations for issues going on in our environment and in politics and all those things. None of those salvations will work. Not for long. We're delivered from one problem, and then it just becomes another problem. And then another problem. And another problem, from one global scare to another global scare, from one issue in our life to another issue in our life. Our problem is deeper than we realize. We have a fundamental flaw. We are diseased with sin. It corrupts even our best efforts. It taints everything we do. And until sin is dealt with, there will be no end to the rolling of this wheel that is going down and down this spiral away from God. We can look to all the obvious places, to the wealthy, to the smart, the powerful, the noble, the well-intended, but they all fail. We can solve all of our daily problems. We can try to, but it's not going to fix the real thing we need deliverance from. And that deliverance doesn't come from the rich and the wealthy and the noble and the smart and any of those things. That deliverance comes from an unexpected place. He was born a lowly birth to nobody parents in a nowhere place where no child should ever be born, where animals eat and are kept. He was rejected and attacked by most of the people around him, abandoned, betrayed. He had no military strength, no wealth, no big education. He had nothing about his appearance that would make him attractive to anybody, in spite of all the paintings everyone likes to paint of him with piercing blue eyes and flowing hair and nice skin. The Bible tells us there was nothing about him that would draw people to him in attractiveness. And he was executed like a criminal on a cross with other criminals 2,000 years ago. And maybe that's the worst thing about Jesus to people in our world today. Maybe the worst thing about Jesus is that he's so 2,000 years ago. How could someone who doesn't even know about iPhones possibly be the one who will deliver me today? How could someone who doesn't know about technology in life today, how could they possibly be the source of my salvation today? And yet, as unexpected as Jesus was in his day, even more unexpected today, he is the deliverer we truly need for the problem that's the root of all else. And Jesus did exactly what Jael did. He took the enemy of God, he took sin and death, and he drove a nail through it on that tree we call the cross. He judged it there to spare us from judgment. He crushed the enemy to set us free. That's the deliverer we need, and that's the deliverance we need. Let's not get that confused. Let's not let ourselves be overwhelmed by all these other things and forget the foundation of what we truly need and where that deliverance really comes from. So what if the deliverance you need isn't from the most obvious problems? And what if the deliverance you need doesn't come from the most obvious places? Today, whether you're already a follower of Jesus or not, I invite you again to think about, where are you looking to for deliverance? What things are you obsessed with being delivered from? Are you looking to the obvious places for all the obvious problems? Or are you looking to the unexpected place for the root cause of our problem? Sin. Only Jesus can deliver us from sin and give us life. Worship team, would you come back? When Jesus does that, when Jesus delivers us from sin, that redefines the way you look at all the other problems in your life. It redefines the way you see all those other things in your life. Once the real problem is solved, that sickness, that disease of sin, and you realize it, truly, fully realize it, what you'll notice is it begins to change the way you look at all the other things in your life. All the other deliverances you're looking for, they begin to have less sting, they begin to have less bite, because you've already been saved from the only thing that can threaten your soul and your eternity. And now everything else, you know God is more powerful than those things, because they cannot touch us anymore. This morning, as we sing this song about Jesus being our living hope, I encourage you to think about it. Let's stand together. We're just going to sing this song before we receive our offering. Some of you in this place, maybe you didn't realize you've been looking in all the wrong places for deliverance. But this morning, if you feel Jesus calling you, saying, I am the one who can deliver you from what it is you truly need deliverance from. And all those other things will fall into place, but let's start with the main problem, the root of the problem. Stop running away from me and running to me. If that's the place you're in this morning, then I want to pray for you. And also, everyone, grab that card. I know your heads are down, but you don't have to close your eyes. Grab that card. The first next step there is, I need deliverance from, and if you've heard me, every one of you is going to write sin. It's almost a little pop quiz to see what will you write there. If you've heard me, what you'll recognize is that fundamentally the most important thing I need deliverance from right now, today, is sin. All the other things follow after that. So write that in there and then just pray this. Lord Jesus, forgive my sin. Forgive me from running from you, from ignoring you. Trying to be my own king, from throwing myself at other things in life. save me, deliver me, and give me new life. The moment you ask him for that, truly acknowledge that, Jesus swoops in and saves you. The next part on that card is, where might God want to use you as a deliverer? So grab that card and ushers, come to the front. We're going to sing another song in a moment. Grab that card. The next question is, where might God use you? Because here, listen to me, if you've understood this, and ushers, just come to the front and wait here for a minute. If you've understood what God's word says here to us today, then you'll recognize there's another part for us. If you've asked Jesus to deliver you and you recognize, yep, sin is the thing, and you're in that place, you're following Jesus, here's what you and I need to next then grab hold of before we go out of these doors today. We need to grab hold of what Deborah says to Barak. Does not the Lord go out before you? Didn't Jesus go to the cross before you and lay down his life before you? What does that mean? You come after to the cross and lay down your life there too. Didn't Jesus rise from the dead before you? Yes. What does that mean? We are as good as already risen. Has not the Lord gone before you out into this world? Into your families, among your friends who don't know Christ, your coworkers, into all the situations that maybe you walked in here worrying about? Hasn't the Lord gone before you? And if he has, then we need to do what Barak did and what Deborah did and what Jael did and what the storm did, and go take our part and play our role as vessels through whom God can bring unexpected deliverance. Because I don't know about you, but it's pretty unexpected that God could use me to bring deliverance into someone's life. No matter what you may think, those who know me know it's pretty unexpected. And you may feel about yourself that I don't know how God could use me to really bring deliverance into someone's life. But what we just saw is God can use anyone who will submit to him. The thing is, you can either be used like Deborah and Jael and Barak, or you can be used like Eber. I'd rather be used working alongside of God than just be used even though I was trying to fight against God. So this morning, you and I can recognize he's gone before us. Where does God want to use you as an unexpected source, an unexpected vessel through whom he's going to bring deliverance into someone's life? Think about that. Write that on that card right now as I pray for our giving. And then we're going to sing this song. Did you feel